Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC, immigration.com. Today is Thursday, May 10th, 2012. This call is a courtesy call for the community. By participating in this call, we do not establish an attorney-client relationship. You are not bound to us, nor we to you. All information is provided to the best of our knowledge and ability. We make no guarantees. This is not a substitute for individual consultation. That said, I have a few questions already that have been posted. At the end of those, I will, as usual, invite people to ask follow-up questions. And if they have, if there are any new questions, we'll take them at the very tail end. I want to caution you, this call is being recorded. So if you do not wish your voice to be recorded, you may want to just stay quiet, or you can disguise your identity. The call will be made publicly available. That said, the first question is from Rahul Gopal Joshi, registered user from our community, who says, working for company A, H4 and H1B extensions, applied, approved. Now, changing jobs again, do we have to do an H4 again? No, you do not. If the H-1B person has been maintaining status throughout, it is not required that each time you change H-1, you also have to extend H-4, change H-4. But if the H-4 is about to expire, then of course you do extend it. Also, if the company B, which is the new employer, wants to start the perm process, do they need to wait to file perm till H-1B transfer approved? No. You can start your perm application at any time, even before the H-1B transfer is approved. That is no problem at all. Okay? Let's go on to the next question from Lakshmi underscore M. Entered USA on F-1 visa. They have a whole history. But the bottom line is, in between somewhere, for 8 months they were on bench, and when they did a transfer out from that company on H-1, they just were given last two pay stubs to transfer the case. Look, you know, I have a problem with that. If somebody has not been paid throughout, and pay stubs are generated just because we want to get the H-1 approval, I think USCIS could very well say that this is fraud. So I'm concerned. Folks, if an employer suggests that you do that, just stay away from it. I would rather have you, you know, lose your H-1 than be subject to permanent bar from entering USA on fraud grounds. So be careful with that. Now, all that is done, the good news is that you have left USA and come back in December 2011. So what that does is the out-of-status problems are over, and you will apply 485 and the priority date becomes current. So I don't have any problem there. Okay, we are good there. I'm just concerned if USCIS wants to, they can make an issue of this as a potential fraud case. I hope it won't happen, but discuss this with your lawyers. You know, you should be ready with whatever needs to be done. Let me see. There are some follow-up questions. Would not having W-2 hurt? What happens if I don't have a W-2? Well, it all depends. Every question that you have asked me about your green card as well as your citizenship potentially, the answers are all the same. If the government wants to make an issue of it, they can. Okay? Next question is actually a very, very interesting question from just a question. Who wants to know? You know, I have seen, he says, I've seen various artifacts in relation to immigration, INA, CFR, memos, guidance letters, there may be more. What is the legal standing of each of these? Is there a court case which of these, you know, if there is a court case, which of these hold good? Okay. Let me explain to you the dignity awarded to the laws. At the top is U.S. Constitution. Anything in USA that is unconstitutional will be declared invalid. Below that is INA, Immigration and Nationality Act. Okay? Immigration and Nationality Act is the statute passed by Congress which has number two level of dignity. Anything that is in violation of INA, whether it's a regulation, a memo, it will be declared null and void. Below that are published regulations, which are CFR, Code of Federal Regulations. Okay. Below that are memos, guidance, opinions. Actually, I would say above that, one level above that, are court cases, court opinions, interpretation of the law. Below that are all kinds of guidances. Now, some of these guidance letters you can actually use in courts. Some others you cannot. You will see a lot of these guidance letters now have started having standard language. This is merely for internal guidance of USCIS. It does not create any rights, so you can't use them in lawsuits. be that as it may, excuse me, anything that has been published by the government will have some persuasive effect. If you take it to court, at least some leverage you might get. But everything depends. Some of these memos are binding on the government, like AIDS memorandum. I think it will be binding. Unless it's changed, it will be binding. So it all depends upon exactly what we are, you know, what level of law and what level of dignity of law we are dealing with. The guidance letters may or may not have the force of law, but they can always help. Okay? Does that mean one should not rely on memos and guidance? Well, we have no choice. This question that you ask, we have no choice. We do rely upon them, and many times we can make it stick. Because under doctrines of law, one of the doctrines is something called equitable estoppel, which basically means if we have justifiably relied upon something, the government should not be allowed to go back on it. It's not easy to win on equitable estoppel, but there are cases where we could argue that. Okay? Next question is from Super King. My 6 years of H-1 ends in August 2012. Applied for perm in October, and it's under audit. So if I don't get an I-140 approval, there's no extension possible because it's not 365 days. Wife works on L1. So can I work on L2 EAD? Absolutely. No problem at all. Once your change of status, etc. is approved, you can definitely work on L2. If my perm approval and I-140 go fine and get approved by December 2012, assuming that I'm working on L2, can my employer request for 3 years of H1? Yes, sir. You can go back from L2 to H1. So again, I'll phrase this for you again. You can go from H1 to L2 and get EAD and start working. And then you can go back on H1 when you become eligible. No problem. Next question is Dame, EB3 to EB2 priority date porting. So one of the questions is, if the previous employer revokes my I-140, even if it was approved several years ago, can they revoke it? Yes, they can. But do I carry my priority date? And the answer is yes. That was made clear a couple of weeks ago. I have posted a video on it, and if you look at the bottom here, I've actually posted that video for all of you guys to take a look at. So yes, no problem. Next question is from Rich ML 9987. He's getting married to somebody who was born in Nepal but is a citizen of India. So his question is, once I get married to her, even though I am the primary and she'll be the derivative of a green card, I will be under EB2. Can I file my 485 right away? Yes, sir, you can. This is called cross-chargeability. Your priority date does not have to be current. You can inherit your wife's country of birth as your country. Even though she's an Indian citizen, she was born in Nepal, so she is chargeable under immigration law to Nepal. Therefore, you can cross-charge to her. No problem. AKS 341 is a student who sold some personal items on eBay That's no problem. I don't think that's going to be an issue, okay? I don't think the government is going to object to that. If anything, it's a very small matter. And, you know, as long as you don't make a business of it, I don't think it's going to create a problem. The fact that you sold some tickets that you got free, occasional buying and selling on eBay, I don't think is a problem. Okay, excuse me, let me just... Then, next question is from Imiraz. Work during 221G. He's one of those people who went for visa stamping, got stuck there, H-1 visa, and he's been working for them, for his client. So he was hoping that that would help. It has already been 3+ months. Does it really help working for the same client? I think it does. It does not have any bearing on the final outcome, but it may have a bearing on the continuity of the job. Because if you land at the airport after you get your visa stamping and the CBP officer says, well, where are you going to work? And if it's the same client, obviously they won't keep the job open if you are not continuing to work for them. So I think overall it helps. That's my opinion. Next question. L1A denial at Chennai Consulate. He's got an L1A denial. So the question is, let me see, 5 questions. If I apply for a visa again, like an H-1B or an L1A individual, do I have to pay the visa fees again? Yes, sir, you do. If I apply for premium H-1B, do I have to go to the consulate for interview again? Yes, sir, as far as I know, you do. But local rules vary. You need to double check with the consulate. I don't see why you don't have to. He says the place is hot, talking about Chennai, the place is hot, humid, very expensive, and has nothing to eat. I'm so sorry. Oh, he's funny. But, you know, I think you may not, but, you know, you do have an option of going to another consulate. Don't forget that. Because under Indian rules currently, you can actually go to any consulate you like. You don't have to go back to Chennai. So maybe you could choose a consulate where the weather and the expenses and the food is better. Okay? Okay, you were in USA for F1, then H-1B for 6 years. Do you think there's a good chance of getting L-1A refused? See, I don't know why the L-1A was refused. From what you're telling me, that it was denied on wrong grounds. It looks like it could be easily corrected. You could even go apply for the same L-1A again and see if the counselor would reconsider it. But if they won't, you can always do an individual L-1A, as you already know. I prefer that you go for an L-1A because that makes your green card so easy. Within a year, you will have your green card. Nothing beats that. Not that you can't get your green card under EB-1 even if you enter on H-1B. You can. But it makes it easier, I think. So take your pick. I have a valid F2. Will they cancel it? Yes. Normally, they should cancel all existing visas. Sometimes they don't. Okay. So you can only enter on F2 visa if your spouse is still on F1. Okay. Just remember that. Do you think this can be appealed to a consumer court? Yeah, there's no consumer court. There is actually a very good point. He says, do you think an appeal to consumer court should be made for this nonsensical looting of dollars of visa fees? You know, that's a good point, but the problem is, first of all, when you are inside the U.S. consulate, under public international law, you are on U.S. soil. Indian laws do not apply. Okay? Second, consular decisions are non-reviewable, let me rephrase that, non-reviewable in courts because of something called Foreign Powers Act, if I remember correctly, that's the law. Courts don't interfere with the consulates lightly. However, there was a case day before yesterday from Ninth Circuit in California where Circuit Court, which is the Court of Appeals, said nothing doing. If consulates step out of certain bounds, we can look at their decision-making. So that's something positive. Well, all these questions have been answered. Now I'm going to open. Let me see if I can get this working here. I'm going to open the floor, first of all, for follow-up questions. So anybody who has a follow-up question to what we were discussing, press star 5, please. Star 5. Press star 5 on your phone. I'll be able to see you. Okay. One question. All right. Anybody has a question, press star 5. I have one question from 773 area code. Okay. 773, can you hear me? 773, go ahead, please. 773, for some reason they can't hear me. Okay. Anybody has any question, go ahead and press star 5. I'll get back to 773. Anybody has any question? Okay, one, two.
I have a question.
Yes, 773, go ahead, please.
No, this is from 916 area code.
Actually, you know what? Your phone shows 773, but that's okay.
Oh,
your ID says 773, but that's not a big deal. We're not
okay.
Going to fight for it. So you go ahead, please. Tell me what's going
on. This is a very new question. I tried to post it, but I could not because I'm a new joinee in the forum.
Mm-hmm.
So my case is like I was working for company A on H1B till last year, that is July 2011. And in July 2011, Company B applied for my H1 transfer.
Right.
They did it through the normal processing. And
right.
I started working based on the missed notice.
Okay.
And in February 10th, 2012, my H1B with the Company B got denied. It is a USCIS mistake. They took the date wrong. And then Company B appealed for it within 2 days.
All right.
And I continued working with Company B because they said I can work on the appeal. So I can.
Let me stop there. That's wrong. That's incorrect information, but keep going.
Okay.
Keep going, yeah.
So it means that I should not work with the appeal.
No, ma'am. And I'm assuming what you're saying is a motion to reopen or an appeal. Either way. None of these things give you a right to continue working, okay? And in my opinion, filing an MTR or an appeal against an H1 denial is not a smart idea because it takes so long, you're better off just refiling the H1. There may be reasons for it. I can't think of what the reasons are, but they may have their reasons. If I were them,
okay.
I would have filed a new H1 premium processing, okay?
Yes.
Please be careful.
So the company...
Ma'am, one second. Let me finish this. Very important. You may be in unlawful presence. If you are unlawfully present in USA for 180 days, you can't come back for 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay? And unlawful presence, as far as I can tell, there are other considerations here, but I'm making a quick judgment for you. So you can go have your lawyers take a look at it. But unlawful presence will begin at the very least on the date your H1 was denied through Company B.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's what it happened. Like, you know, I worked based on the appeal receipt since the lawyer said, and then the Company B again refiled my H1 in premium processing.
Oh, they did.
So,
oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Okay. Keep going.
They refiled, like, after, I think, 20 days, they refiled a new H1B in premium processing. And on March 24, 2012, on April 24, 2012, I got an approval notice
without the I-94.
Without the I-94.
Yeah, that's what I would have predicted. So you are stuck with having to go outside USA for visa stamping.
Yes, but in that, in the extension of status denial, they said from February 10th, I am out of status. So I worked unlawfully for 2.5 months. So meantime, what happened is...
Wait, let me interrupt you for 1 second. I want to add a point here. That is not going to be a detriment for your visa stamping. No problem.
Oh, okay. meantime, what happened is, Rajiv.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Meantime, what happened is on March 20th, my husband's company, they filed for my green card, like you know, the employment-based green card for
sure.
the whole family.
Sure.
They applied for my green card, and I got all the receipts on March 27th, 2012.
Okay.
So, and after getting the judgment on my H-1B on April 25th, I stopped working, and like I am now staying on the AOA status without working, waiting for my EAD. Because
Wait. You have already filed your AOS?
Yes.
Okay, and it was
yes,
filed
sir.
Within 180 days of February, of course?
Yes, sir. Like February 10th was my denial, and at March 20th, they filed for my AOS.
Okay. Now, ma'am, I don't have a whole lot of time to really put all my attention into this, but from what you have told me, it appears you are doing okay. Just make sure, since your last entry into U.S. before filing the 485,
mm-hmm.
when did you last enter U.S. before filing the 485?
That is in 2009, sir.
Between 2009 and now, you should not have more than 180 days of out-of-status period.
Yes, sir. I don't have. Like after coming on,
you will be fine under Section 245K of the Immigration and Nationality Act. You are protected. You should be okay. Double check with your lawyers. I don't see any problem here.
Okay, sir. So do I need to go out of the country and get the stamping, or can I stay here?
You can wait for your EAD to come, and when the EAD comes, then start working.
Okay, sir. So once I get my EAD, sir, if I go to India and get H-4 stamping, because H-1 nowadays it's taking, because mine is going to be administrative processing, so it might take more than 2 months. So
I'm
going
to have to ask you to hold. Ma'am, I've got three other people that I want to talk with. Let me get back with you because I just want to make sure I cover everybody, okay? You already have a lawyer.
Okay.
I don't see any major problem. I'm going to put you on hold, and I'll come back with you, okay?
Okay, sir.
Okay, area code 732. Go ahead, please. 732 logged in at 12:30.
Hi, Rajiv.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah, good afternoon, Rajiv.
Yes.
I actually have a question regarding my green card processing. My employer filed my green card in EB3 category.
Okay.
And they got audit on that, and they have replied it, but still waiting for the audit decision.
Okay.
I just wanted to know, at what stage is there a possibility of changing my EB3 to EB2? Can we do that?
Ma'am, the way it works is, first you have to get the EB3 I-140 approval.
Okay.
Once that is done, then through this employer or through another employer, you've got to be offered an EB2 level job. And then you redo the perm and redo the I-140 again under EB2.
Oh, so I have to wait. I mean, it wouldn't be any issue, even if the same employer files my EB2 after getting EB3 I-140 approval.
Well, I wouldn't say it won't be any issue, but as long as the employer can reasonably support both an EB3 and EB2 application, they are large enough, they actually genuinely have an EB2 level job, I don't see any problem. We do it all the time.
Okay. So I have to get now EB3 labor, and after that my employer has to file I-140, and after getting I-140 approval, then only I can apply labor for EB2?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, okay. And
okay.
One more thing, Rajiv. Hello?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah. One more thing is, if we apply premium process for I-140, would there be any chances of getting query or anything?
See, people have asked me this question very many times. Personally, I have not seen any indication that just because you filed a premium processing case, you got more inquiry or more attention than you really do if you don't file a premium case. In my view, it doesn't matter.
Okay. And immediately after I get I-140, I can ask my employer to file for EB2 labor, right? Do I have to wait?
Talk to your lawyer about the timing issue. They might be able to save you some time, but the principle is very simple. In order to inherit a priority date, an I-140 must be approved.
Okay.
All right?
And then only I can apply for EB2. Okay.
Yes. Good luck.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Raja.
Bye-bye. Okay, our own neighborhood, area code 703. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. My question is, my wife's H-4 got expired in March 31st, 2012. And I had applied through a consultant for her H-1 in year 2011, which is around July. Then the consultant got an RFE in February of 2012. And then they responded in April 2012 for the RFE. And we are still waiting for the response. My question first is her status legal in the country as of now?
She is legal. She is referred to as a person who is in authorized period of stay. Authorized period of stay.
Okay.
She's legal.
So then my second question is, let's say if the H-1 gets denied, then I believe she would be in an illegal status in the country. Is that correct?
She will be immediately out of status. Yes, sir.
So what can be done in that case? Her H-1 is still pending. Do I reach out to my company and ask them to apply for her H-4 while her H-1 is in processing to be on the safe side?
I don't think that's such a good idea. And I don't think, you see, her status is authorized period of stay.
Okay.
USCIS normally does not permit people to go from authorized period of stay to status within USA. So if you want to convert her to H-4, you won't be able to probably. The only way to get her back into H-4, listen to me. The only way to get her back into H-4 is to have her go outside for a visa stamping.
Right. So the problem here is like because of medical reasons, we're expecting basically a baby in July and she can't travel right now. So my concern is if the H-1 doesn't get approved in next 1 month or so.
You do this. If there is a problem like this, the H-1 is denied and, you know, nothing has been taken care of, you give me a call. I will figure out something better for you.
Okay.
Okay.
But you are not recommending to...
There will be no charge for the consultation. Just call me.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Don't worry. You'll be okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Okay. Anyone has any question before I go back to the lady? Oh, there's one more I missed. Oh, there's more than that. There's a couple more. Just give me a second, guys. Oh, there's actually four or five more. All right, let's go to the person who logged in the order of the time you logged in. Area code 571. Go ahead, please, 571.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv. This is Rajesh. I was trying to post on the web, but I'm a new user, so I couldn't. So I wanted to just ask the question here. Basically, my case is, I'm a EB3 priority date of June 2003, and I got my green card in 2007.
Okay.
I was married, but due to the change in law at the time, I couldn't file for my wife's 485 until I got my green card. So I filed my wife's 485 in August 2007, the moment I got my GC.
Hang on one second. Rajesh, one second.
Yeah.
You said you got your green card in 2007, correct?
Correct. When the bulk current happened, like bulk, everybody was current at that time.
I understand. So at that time, were you married or not married?
I was married, but and the law at that time was to, the PD has to be current to apply for 485 for the dependent.
Still the same law.
Yes, still the same law. So as soon as my date was current, I applied. Then I got my green card. My wife is still waiting as a derivative.
Okay, but
on
wait.
The AOS.
What status is she waiting in? Is she on H1?
She's on AOS, adjustment of status.
Oh, so I see. So, let me understand this. The facts are a little unclear. Let me understand. I get it right. You and your wife both filed AOS.
Yes.
Okay.
AOS.
You filed AOS. You got yours, but by the time they got...
No. Oh, okay, let me go back a little bit. My PD was June 2003. My 485 was filed end of 2003. Primary.
Oh, and hers was filed in 2007.
That's correct.
So you filed your AOS in 2003.
Right. When at that time I was not married, so I filed mine, and by the time I got married and my wife came in, the rules changed, so I couldn't file her 485.
Okay, now that I understand. Rajesh, just bear with me for a second. So in 2003 you filed your AOS, then you get married, you are on H1, she comes on H4, then you filed hers in 2007.
Correct.
She's on AOS pending. You got your
green
card.
Right.
Now tell me what else is going on. Sure.
Now the question is, I'm now eligible for my citizenship.
The problem is, if you get your citizenship, she cannot inherit your green card. Then you have to apply for her green card again separately as the spouse of a U.S. citizen.
Okay. During that time, during this process, is she going to be legal here or what?
No.
What would be?
She will be illegal. Well, let me rephrase that. Until USCIS actually finds out that you have gotten your naturalization and they go and revoke her I-485, at least she's here under a color of law. We can't say she's illegal. But here is the fun part. The fun part is that a U.S. citizen spouse, even if they are unlawfully present for 50 years, they can still get their green card within USA, as long as they don't travel outside USA before getting the green card.
I see. So my bet here is to stay here within the country until she gets the green card. After my season.
No. Not you. You can travel. She cannot. If
she cannot, but
if she becomes unlawfully present. Okay. So let me. It's going to be a little difficult to get into the details of the law in this short conversation. But here is the overview. The overview is this. You have two choices, to apply for naturalization or not to apply. If you apply for naturalization and you get it, immediately apply for her green card separately.
Okay.
You will file I-130, and I would say you would even file 485, although you could try filing just the I-130 and tell USCIS to connect the I-130 with the I-485. Okay?
Okay.
You can double-check whether they'll allow this by calling the customer service. They probably won't know this answer, but it doesn't hurt to check. She should not travel outside until she gets her green card. You can travel wherever you want to go.
Okay.
That's
the So there was one more question, though. I was told by someone that I could go ahead and file the I-130 even now while I'm on my green card.
What's the point? It takes 6-7 years. What's the point?
But can that be ported after I get my
citizenship? You can upgrade. You can upgrade the I-130.
Does that give her any... I don't see
any advantage, but I don't see any disadvantage either.
I see. Okay.
Okay?
Okay, I think that's helpful. Appreciate that. Thank you, really. I've been waiting for this answer. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Good luck, sir. Bye-bye. Okay. Next is area code 732 again, 732-983.
Hey, hi, Rajiv. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Oh, hi. I was dialing Star 5 for a long time. Not sure why I didn't show up. Anyway, my question is, I posted on the username Super Kings.
Hang on. Can you please speak clearly and slowly because I can't hear you? Let's try.
I posted under the username Super Kings.
Super King, yes. I saw your.
Yes. My firm, went to audit and, you know, my sales gets over Sony Macro. Right? I will have the option of moving to the EAD and then still continue to work, right?
My 6 years of H1 L2 EAD. Hang on. My wife currently works in. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's exactly what I said. I said that you can go to L2 EAD, work, and then go right back to H1B within US.
Right. And the day I apply for L2, I have to stop working, right?
Not the day you apply. That's where things get a little fuzzy. You can continue working through the life of your H1 until you actually get notified of the L2 approval.
Oh, I can, is it? Okay, because they are contradicting statements that I see all over the net. So,
things get a little fuzzy here. It's very difficult to... between the time USCIS approves your case and you get the notification, it's 10, 12 days. What are you supposed to do in the meantime? Dream up? I mean, I personally don't see any problem with it. It's a de minimis violation. It's a small violation. And they have to forgive it because we are not dealing with, like they say in IT, this is not a real-time system. There's a lag here.
Right. And then right now, you cannot apply for both L2 and EAD together, right? They have to do it, you have to do it separately, right?
As far as I know, we do it all the time. We apply for them together.
Together?
Absolutely.
And,
we always do it.
And do you get the approvals together?
I don't know about the approvals, but I know that we do it as in our firm, we always do it together. I could be wrong about this. I don't do any of the filings myself, but I'm quite certain that's the way we do it. You can double-check with the USCIS information.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rajiv. Yeah,
you're welcome. Good luck. Okay. The next one is also area code 732-910. 732-910. Okay. Let's go on to...
Thanks for arranging community calls. Actually, I want to check with you. Porting from EB3 to EB2 is possible. Is it possible to port from EB2 to EB3?
Can you port from EB2 to EB3? So if you have an EB2 approval, but you want to take the lower category... Hey, if you want to, I don't see why not.
No, because EB3 priority date is a little earlier than EB2 priority date.
You know, that's an interesting question, and as far as I know, I think you can make a choice. This kind of issue has come up before. When Philippines used to be very backed up, some of the quotas were skewed, so we actually were taking the lower category because you got the green card easier. So the answer is yes, if you have two approvals, you should be allowed to choose whichever gets you the green card first.
Oh, okay. But the problem is my EB3 labor got denied initially and then it has been appealed. Meantime, when it was waiting for the approval of the EB2 has been applied and then 140 is also filed and approved for EB2.
Then you don't have an EB3 priority date. Until the EB3 labor cert is approved and the I-140 is approved, you don't have an EB3 priority date.
Okay. And if I get EB3 approval, 140 approval later, I cannot port?
You can. If you get the I-140 approval for the EB3, you can. But there are other issues here. Make sure both jobs are surviving. You know, make sure that you talk with your lawyers about these issues. But theoretically speaking, what you are saying is absolutely possible.
Okay. So we can do something, amendment of I-140 and existing 140?
Don't worry about the mechanics. Your lawyers can figure that out. As long as your EB3 I-140 get approved, you have both choice.
All right. Thanks, Rajiv. Thank
you. Welcome. Good luck. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. I have area code 773 holding on still. And then I have one more call from area code 608. Go ahead, please. 608.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Namaste, Rajivji. This is Rahul Joshi again.
Namaste. How are you?
I'm doing good. I have one question, and I already posted it, and I have a follow-up question on that.
You are the 221G gentleman, right?
No, no, no. I am the very first gentleman.
You are the very first gentleman. Let's see.
Yeah, the first post.
Okay, let's see. Oh, yes. You want to change him?
I have my given name, so you can find me.
I got it. I see you right in front of me. Rahul Gopal Joshi, right?
Yeah. That's my real name, too.
Yes, sir, of course. Tell me what's going on.
So, my follow-up question here is, so currently my wife is on H4.
Right.
And she is also attending a graduate school.
Okay.
For a master's program. And we want to eventually apply for change of status from H4 to F1.
Okay.
One of the questions, well, I have two questions here. One is it, is there something like it is not advisable to do it from here and actually go back to India and get a visa, or it's still okay?
No, not at all. I think it's advisable to do it here.
Okay. So there isn't any issue if you apply it from here, the change of status?
No, sir. I prefer it because that way if she does not get an F1, she still has her H4.
Okay, because that was my second question, as in what happens in case if the change of status gets denied, that she can she still continue on H4 or not?
Absolutely, yes, she can.
Okay, and would there be any restrictions when it comes to, like, for example, if she has to travel, assuming that nothing is pending?
I don't think it should be any problem at all. She has a visa, right, H4 visa?
Yes, she has an H4 visa, which is right now expired, but we have the 797 approval for the
extension. You have to go get an H4 visa stamping. That's the only restriction.
Right. No, but let's say in between, she applies for a change of status to F1 and assume the worst
travel.
Is that it doesn't happen.
She cannot travel. If you
No.
Yeah?
Yeah, I understand when it is pending, she cannot.
Right.
But after we get a decision, and unfortunately, if the decision is no for whatever reason, then she is back on her H4, right?
Right.
And then she can travel, like
no
as
problem.
A usual
yeah.
H4 version.
Let me clarify your doubt. I think what you're saying is this. The fact that her F1 was applied for and denied, does that fact hurt her H4 visa status?
Right, exactly.
The answer is not at all.
Okay. Absolutely. And she will be good to stay on H4 automatically,
if
right?
If she gets a stamping, I mean, H4 visa stamping is not that easy anymore.
Sure. I know. Okay, I think, yeah, that's all.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir. Dhanyawad.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, so I'm coming back to area code 773. You had, I guess, one or two follow-up questions. Go ahead, ma'am. 773?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
You have any follow-up questions for me, or are you done? Do you have any
yes,
follow-up
sir.
Questions?
Yes, sir. I have a follow-up question, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
So my question is, sir, like since for 2.5 months I was working unauthorizedly, unlawfully, so will it affect my ABS approval, sir?
No, but have you already talked about that? Please don't repeat your questions. I told you that Section 245K protects you.
Okay, sir. Sir, after getting my EAD and advanced parole, can I travel to India and get H4 stamping?
Okay, there is really no use of getting H4 stamping because you want to come back and work, right?
Yes, sir, but I heard that if I go to my home country and get either H1 or H4 stamping, then these unlawful days will get cleared. So
no, ma'am, you are misinformed. You are misinformed. You need to sit down with your lawyers and get a detailed consultation. 245K only protects you from from out of status period accrued between the time your 485 was filed and your last entry into U.S. your entry after filing the 485 is not protected by 245K. That doesn't help you.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Good luck to you.
Got you, sir. Sir, is there any double dipping, sir, or...
Ma'am, I think you need to sit down with your lawyers. You need to sit down with your lawyers. You need to figure these things out because you have some basic misunderstanding that I can't remove in this much time that we have. Sit down with your lawyers. Understand how 245K works.
Okay, sir.
You're going to be okay. Nothing to worry about here. That's why I'm not, you know, spending a whole lot of time holding your hand. You've got a lawyer. Things look fine. I don't see any major issues. Go and talk with them. Okay?
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome. You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, I have, I guess, a follow-up question from 608. Anybody has any questions? Now is the time, because this is the last question I'm doing otherwise. Press star 5 if you have a question. Okay, 608 it is then. 608, go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Namaste, Rajivji. I guess two more follow-up questions.
Okay.
And we just talked a minute back.
Yeah, Rahul Gopal.
So right. So assume, like, in the condition that, say, my wife, F1 is approved, goes back to F1 status.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meanwhile, say, my my firm, I mean, basically, and then she, you know, tries to, like, eventually there will be the OPing and all of that stuff according to the F1 rules. Now my question is, in the new OPT rules, like, if you don't, essentially if you don't get a job in 90 days, then you automatically expire your F1 status, right?
I thought it was 60 days.
60 days, sorry. Yeah, 60 days.
Right.
So unfortunately, if that happens, then would it basically mean that
Hang on a second. Let me clarify something for you.
Sure.
Look at, I don't know the entire law off the top of my head, but they define job very loosely. As long as you're working certain number of hours a week, whether it's paid or unpaid, internship or job, doesn't matter. I think it's as little as 25 hours, something like that. So even if she got some kind of a research project or just doing some volunteer work in her own field, that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I was just thinking about the case that in that case, do we have to file again for her H4, sorry.
You would have to, of course, if you want to.
Right. So
now, as long as you're not trying to get rid of your wife, that's the right way to go.
And then, USCIS look at all of that suspiciously? Is like, so you changed to F1 get a job, and now you are coming back to H2.
That's fine. You can do that. That's perfectly legal. Why would they look at it suspiciously? That's your right.
Okay. And right. And the other follow-up question I have is, so in between, if my perm is going to be started, and then if at some point of time in some years my TD gets started.
Let me interrupt you for a second here.
Sure.
Once the green card process, I-140 onwards, F-1 makes it become quite complicated. Okay. It's not a simple question that I can answer in 5 minutes. You need to sit down with your lawyers and discuss when it comes to I-140 stage. Before that, sit with them and decide how you are going to handle your wife's case.
Okay.
It's not difficult to manage. It's not difficult to manage, but it's got to be managed. Don't just assume that's all they can care of.
Okay, so this has to be handled before the I-140, right?
Before the I-140 is filed, make sure you talk with your lawyer.
Okay. That's it. That's the point.
Good luck.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Folks, as always, it's great to have you all here. Thank you for being here. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And this is the end of the call today. Thank you.